Welcome to Everything But The Tip, the podcast that bucks the trend of the mainstream golf content being churned out by the masses. Presented by the co-founders of Smart Golf and Fitness, we're on a mission to guide golfers towards genuine improvement. No swing tips, no shortcuts, we're anti-instant gratification. Join us as we navigate the complexities of the game, offering insights on how to truly excel in golf by embracing the challenges and breaking free from the usual quick fix mentality. All right, we're back with another episode of Everything But The Tip. I'm your host, Joe Sharon, and alongside me, we have my co-host, business partner, and fearless leader of the fitness squad, Tommy Asuma. Guys, I'm real excited about tonight's episode as we get to hear about another smart golf and fitness instruction experience firsthand from our student and good friend, Cy Monley. And not only do we get to hear from him about his experience, but both his coaches, myself and Dan Zima, will be joining us to help discuss and unpack his journey thus far. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having us.
Great to be back.
Okay, so plan tonight is I want to start off in a way not too dissimilar to your experience when you joined us here at Smart Golf, which you may recall was a two-hour initial assessment, but that assessment started off with an interview. And I would like to ask some of those questions that you were asked in that interview to help paint a picture to our audience, as we like to add perspective and relativity for them. So we speak to what we call the 11 characteristics that play a role in the rate of development. And more or less, it's just to highlight and showcase that not all individuals will learn at the same pace, and there are very specific reasons for this. So, Cy, let's kick it off. I want you to start off by just sharing with us your age, your background in sports, and honestly, just how you found your way into golf.
Sure. Thanks, Joe. So I played football, basketball, high school, college, tennis, and was pretty active my entire life. Then I had a lower back surgery in 05 when I was 23. Three ankle surgeries, left ankle surgeries. Been playing golf for 20 years, but really aggressive probably the last 5 to 7 years. And I said, I want to get really good. Right. And I took some lessons, kind of bounced around trying to figure out the golf swing via YouTube and did all that. And I would take one off lessons and I just couldn't figure it out. Right. And what happened to me was I said, I'm going to make an all in approach or take an all in approach. I'm not going to take 5 lessons. I'm not going to take these one kind of one off scenarios. I wanted to be all in. So I said, I have a year. I'm going to get a total ankle replacement, left ankle replacement. After that, I was committed.
And what year was that?
And that's kind of how you found us here, right? So you and I met on the range up at Evanston.
It was amazing. I mean, the timing was couldn't be better. I saw you and we were sitting there, Tommy, and you were kind of helping me stretch out and show me my body, you know, capabilities.
Yeah, we were up at the Maryville outing, so we've been involved with that outing for quite some time, as I understand you have as well. So I saw you hobbling up with your foursome.
I limped up there.
Yeah, you limped right up there. So, you know, we're doing some pre-round stretching. We struck up a good conversation and learned a little bit about your history and what you had, you know, coming up. So,
the thing that really made me grab you, Tommy, was it was fitness and golf. And so what you guys said is this is a total package, right? Like this isn't just one lesson. You're going to learn about your body and you're going to learn about your golf swing with, you know, like what Dan and I have been working on is how your body moves in the golf swing. And that's what made me go, aha, that's right. Right. If I have a post ankle surgery, I want that. I want to know how my body moves. I want to know what my limitations are because that's how you get better.
So that was more so than my looks and my cheer.
Well, no, the lack of hair really made me enjoy the conversation because I have lack of hair on the top too. So I thought, hey, we're kind of on the same page.
Good
Yeah.
All right. So let's reel it back here again. No, that's fine. Let's just stay within this interview. I want to continue to paint the picture. Did you say you played at one of those sports in college?
Yeah, I played basketball.
You did play. What position did you play?
I played 3 guard and 4 guard.
Okay. And just you'd kind of jumped ahead and went straight into some of the major injuries, which is, again, a discussion we go in depth with every one of our clients when they first sit down with us. So I appreciate you doing this. When did you first hurt that ankle?
16 years old.
Okay. And doing?
Playing basketball, just kept spraining it. So I kept spraining it. And I had a 2013, I had a small surgery. They just tried, they put artificial ligaments to try to support it. Then fast forward, my surgeon at Rush said, nah, you need a fusion or a total ankle replacement. Left ankle, which is your post ankle, right? So I'm right-handed, so that's your post ankle. And I said, Doc, I just want to play golf. That's all I want to be able to do is walk and play golf and pick up my kids. And he said, well, you got to push the surgery back because ankles only last 12 to 15 years. So 5 years ago, he said, you can't do it because you're too young. I was 43, 42. So he just walked me through. He said, once we find an ankle we like, and basically once these shots stop working, which they did, and, you know, the ibuprofen stuff doesn't work anymore, the hard stuff doesn't work anymore, time to get an ankle. So post-COVID, it was like 21. So it's been 2 years this October. So it's 23. It's October, just almost 2 years ago to the date. To the date, we made the decision.
Okay. How often were you playing when you first started with us?
20 times a year. I was working a lot, and I fortunate enough I didn't have to work after 21 much. But I really was kind of a 20 year guy. You know, twice a month.
When did you join Evanston?
2018.
Were you playing roughly 20 rounds a year prior to joining that?
Yep.
And were you just kind of going around the public tracks in the area?
Just going around the public tracks. I was never a golfer growing up. I was, my uncles, one belonged to Naperville Country Club, the other belonged to Butterfield. I'd go down and, you know, being a forever guest at their place, you know, just trying to figure out how to play.
Sure.
You know.
What was the highest level you had gotten to prior to meeting anyone on this team?
15 index. 16 and I was a bogey golfer at best.
Now, had you gotten there mainly by yourself and just athletic ability, or had there been a decent amount of formal instruction up to that point?
I probably had 20 or 30 lessons, but remember.
Sporadically,
but nothing on scoring, chipping, putting. You know, I was basically an athlete that picked up a golf club, watched some things, you know, tried to Bubba Watson it. Right. Just, hey, okay. But as we know, you know, that's not repeatable. It was sort of random. And without a left link ankle to post on, it was all flip. I never turned. I would never get to my left side. It's just kind of,
we're going to get there.
Yeah, I know, but I'd hang back and flip.
Okay. Well, next question is, you know, what were some of your biggest frustrations specifically with golf? Kind of looking at some of what your misses were, not going into the depth of why you think the misses were happening, but what specific areas in the game from a scoring perspective do you think were your biggest issues / frustrations to where you said, hey, man, I want to take this a little more serious. I really want to find out how I can get better.
I would say I always had power, but without being able to think about from 50 yards in, what do? You get to your left side, stay on your left side and turn, right? I mean, essentially, I never did that. So from 50 yards in, chipping.
Were you already aware of this?
I was, but I just couldn't stand on my left side. My ankle hurt so bad that I would just kind of get on my right side. You're right. And so if you think about it, you hang back and flip. So I was all timing with my hands. So I never knew. I that's why I kind of had to figure out my hands, because I didn't have like a body rotation around that left side. And I would watch people go, oh, get to your left side. Phil Mickelson, hinge and hold. And I'm going, what the heck? I can't even stand on that thing. I mean, I was even flipping wrong. I was going like this rather than, you know, like Joe, you were teaching me toe down. I was like, holy shit, I'm flipping wrong. I'm even doing it wrong.
Well, one of those are a flip, one of those aren't, but whatever.
Well, you know what I mean.
Okay. So yeah, I will say it's, you know, not all students are as aware of you were. And I would say had the golf IQ that you had coming into, your first visit with us. But yeah, I mean, as we dive a little bit deeper into our findings, we're going to share with the audience that you were spot on, and we'll definitely go a lot deeper into that. Okay. So let's go a little bit deeper into this. How did you find us?
So Tommy and I were talking, at Evanston, and he really kind of gave me the intro, right? Said, hey, look, if you want to learn golf and you want to learn the physical aspect of golf, come to Smart Golf. I'm like, You know how something goes in the back of your brain. You think, oh, that was kind of interesting. I'll wait on that in a little bit. And then my good friend Barney left, became a coach here. I said, that's my aha moment. Okay. Eric Barnes and I have been friends for a long time. He was the pro at Evanston and left and came with you guys. And Barney and I have been working together, and I'm working with you, Joe. So I actually have two coaches, which I love. You know, like I want more. We're
a team here. So you're as long as we're under the Smart Golf umbrella, we can make an exception.
And that's what I love, right? Like I got Dan, I got Bill, Joe, Tommy comes over once in a while, and it's amazing.
Si needed a lot of help.
I really did. That left ankle was brutal.
Okay, so going back to day one. By the way, how tall are you?
6'4".
Yeah, I just wanted to. I run a 4.4 10-yard dash. Because Si isn't lying. He does definitely have a lot of power, and some of his height and levers definitely aid in that. All right, so what was your original goal when you first started with us, and what is your goal today?
So being an athlete, my goal is I want to be a scratch golfer. Bar none, I think if I can hit the ball far, my body, my connects with my brain, I should be able to perform on the golf course.
What's the lowest round you've shot thus far?
81.
How many times?
79 Shore Acres.
Okay, fair.
Good track.
Yeah. Great track. All right. So prior to us going into your assessment findings, is there anything else you would like to share? Any shameless plugs? Anything you'd like to share with the audience, you know, about yourself personally, or are we good?
Do you really want me to do that?
You can do whatever you want. Long walks on the beach.
Yeah, red wine. Obviously, it's been a great experience. And I say the whole team, Dan, you, Barney, Bill, the whole team is phenomenal. And the whole atmosphere is awesome, right? Like, I think if you could make this a club in charge, I'd still come. Right. I mean, you guys have really done a heck of a job with the atmosphere, the people, the culture, right? The culture is a big thing. And everybody wants to perform. Like, you still have a expectation to do well. But I think everybody wants that out of the client, for the clients as well.
Now, we always say, you know, not everyone here comes from the same walk of life or with the same level of ability. We get beginners to guys that are trying to get paid to play. However, the one commonality is that everyone is dead serious about getting better. And it could be an individual that's never touched a golf club. They know coming here is going to be their best bet to long-term success.
Well, I'll say this. I got a 10-year-old son that I'm not going to bring him anywhere else but with you.
Bring him on in. All right. So now we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to have some of the coaches talk here. We're going to go a little bit more in depth with just some of the findings in which Si had already alluded to earlier. But I will reiterate, as we do in other podcasts, the assessment, you know, once we finish the interview, we're going to inside the hitting bay and we're collecting ball and club data on TrackMan. We're putting guys on KVS. We're measuring their biomechanics, specifically the rotations, quantity of rotations, speed of rotations, order of rotations, seeing how their feet interact with the ground on body track. And then in addition to the high-speed video, once we've concluded there, we'll hand them off to the trainer. But just to paint the picture, Si, you were spot on. In your golf swing, I immediately noticed that you had a propensity to miss right. Okay, so working back, club had a propensity to exit left through the strike. It was not being released efficiently, so you had a tendency to hold on to it and not actually allow the club face to rotate. But going deeper into the body, what I noticed is you had lacked ability to disassociate. So for our listeners, the ability to actually move the lower body independent of the upper body, specifically in transitions where he lacked, and is, as you've come to find out, is an extremely important move in the golf swing. Again, couple that with no weight transfer into the lead side, improper use of the ground, which then inhibited your ability and resulted in a massive chicken wing, which again was a reason why you didn't release it very well, why the club exited left, and why we kind of held onto it. So looking a little bit deeper into the kinematic sequence, this was also a power suck because you didn't really have anything to actually swing against. So people naturally know that there's acceleration in the golf swing, but there's also deceleration of the golf swing. So, and that starts from the ground up, right? So if our hips are going to accelerate, well, we need them to slow down as well. Not that we're ever teaching that. What slows hips down? Well, It could be extension in the lead leg. It could be reaching your end range of motion. But that actually is like putting the brakes on, I would say, like in a car, right? Which then transfers energy through the kinetic chain up into your torso, which then accelerates and decels, transfers energy into your lead arm, which then snaps energy into the club head. If guys don't have something to swing against, they don't get the benefit of that energy transfer from ground to club.
So, Joe, all that you're saying right there, you boil down very well in a lesson. I just want to make that very clear to listeners. When you say all that, it's like one or two important things, and you tell me, don't do this, do this. So all that information gets transferred to me very cleanly. It's not that detailed.
No, that's, I appreciate,
because I'm sure our listeners are, you know, wondering how he even swings a club and if he should still be playing golf. I mean, that was a pretty long laundry list of items there right there. It's like, you know, how does this guy even play the game anymore? But, you know, love to hear a little bit more as we go into that of, you know, how we get through those things,
listeners,
how
we understand, address those things. Not that much.
Right,
Yeah, no, honestly, we've never really had a discussion kind of that nature, right? I've never really quite relayed that to you. Now, in the assessment, we will sit the individual down, and depending on their history and pedigree with golf, we'll determine the level of in-depth, how far in-depth we go with our explanation. But we do sit you down and say, hey, we are going to give you a decent amount of information. It's probably going to be overwhelming. Good news is this. We don't care if you remember a word. However, we do want you to logically understand what we're saying when we say it. And if you don't, please stop and ask questions. Because our whole goal in that assessment as we're going through that information is to be clear that you know that we know exactly what you're doing, why you're doing it, and what the results are coming from. So that way, when it comes down to you signing up for a program, jumping in the hitting bay, putting in the hard work, you don't overlook the big picture. Does that make sense?
It does. It totally does.
So, all right. So now, which this is arguably probably one of the most important parts of the assessment, especially in guys with a similar case as yours, I want to hand it over to you, Dan. I'd love for you to go ahead and talk about your first experience with Cy. Let's go through the initial assessment. What stood out to you? What his findings were? And go in as much depth as you'd like on that conversation.
Thank you, Joe. You know, getting Cy upstairs, and the first thing I thought of was like, holy shit, what is this? And like, you know, Cy fits in his own little box.
Were you looking at his face or his screen results?
Well, you know, the first thing that caught me off guard was the fact that the guy comes up there in a pair of 1985 red Jordans. And I'm like, dude, you got a $150,000 pair of shoes on your feet and you're going to do an assessment with me and then we're going to work out. I'm like, could you just take those off?
First? I'm ready, baby. I'm ready.
Wait, is this a true story?
Yeah.
I was like, this is like blasphemy here. As a guy that loves shoes and like is very meticulous about things, I'm like, oh my God. I was like, all right, well. And, you know, the first thing that stands out is you look at a guy with a fused ankle and you're like, we're going to have to really take this into a good consideration here and figure out what are the key things that I can actually do for him to hopefully, you know, strengthen this and get some of, you know, just ground force back in his swing. Because without really being able to utilize that foot, I was like, you know, everything else is kind of falling second, third, fourth on the pecking order. So, you know, that stood out right away. And, it, you know, frankly, it kind of scared me a little bit because I've never dealt with anything like that. And you see the excitement and the fire in a guy like Cy, you're like, all right, I got to figure out everything I can possibly do for this guy because I see where he wants to get to. And I obviously want to be part of that journey with him to get him to that level. So, you know, that was the first thing that kind of caught me off guard and threw me a little curveball. You know, looking at, you know, some of the other faults that Joe talked about, his inability to disassociate, you know, lack of thoracic mobility, and also his internal and external hip rotation, because he just wasn't doing a lot of that. Everything was basically arms to the flipper. So there was a lot of things that, you know, was very perplexing for me. And like a lot of this was like, this is not going to be a guy that, you know, it's going to be an easy solution or there is a cookie cutter solution to figure out how to fix all this. And, you know, a lot of, I don't want to say late nights were spent thinking about size, foot, or his body.
Go ahead, baby. Go ahead. Tell me.
Well, you know, every once in a while,
you're just imagining what was inside of those shoes. What kind of feet were inside of those shoes?
Man, how does he walk?
Honestly, I mean.
No, Dan, you did a great job. It was an uphill battle for both of us. I mean, it was sort of a back and forth. Are you feeling okay? And can we push it? Are you feeling okay?
Yeah.
And we really had to find that spot.
Yeah. And I think it's still been part of that process where we've kind of done things and then we throw in something in between sets. Like, you know, recently we started throwing a foam roller on your calf and on your ankle in between all of our sets. And it seems to alleviate some of that pain, some of that discomfort, and allows us to push through our hour together a little bit more, with a little bit more purpose, where we're not stopping to take breaks because you're in pain. And like, I mean, there's a fine line between trying to push the threshold and get you to the level you want to, but also be pain-free.
I would say to anybody out there, if this clicks on left ankle issues, foam rolling your left calf, huge deal, huge pain relief. And that's helped me. That was like, but that's just stuff you got to find.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that we, I think overall, from a fitness side and, you know, I would say even the golf side here is that there's a lot of collaboration between not only the fitness coaches and the golf coaches, but also between the clients. Yeah. I mean, you have to have an open discussion. It's almost like you're jumping into a relationship with these people. Like, you want to know as much about them as you possibly can. You also want to know what kind of keeps them ticking, and you have to have that back and forth. Sometimes it might be painful and it's not always going to be appropriate, but that's how you make each other better. And that's how you ultimately provide the service that we're set to provide for our clients on a daily basis.
Yeah. I wouldn't say you're almost going into a relationship. We are 100% going into a relationship. Dan, if you can, or Tommy, whoever wants to kind of dive a little bit deeper, but, you know, I want to go as deep as we can into our screen findings with Cy, because obviously the biggest issue with him was going to be that lead ankle. Yeah. So I want to go a little bit in depth talking about specifically eversion and inversion. So if you could give the audience kind of a simple explanation of what that actually means, Tommy, and, you know, why that is so important when it comes to the golf swing.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's four basic movements in the ankle. So you have, you know, what's called eversion, or kind of rolling your feet inwards towards their arches. And then you have inversion. That's the common way. That's probably the first way that you sprained your ankle. I've had plenty of sprained ankles, you know, being a basketball player myself. But typically, you know, you step down, land on the side of somebody's foot, or come down a little crooked, and that thing rolls outwards pretty well. Sprains those three ligaments on the outside, which is probably what they tried to do with the original surgery, is take some artificial ligaments, attach them on there that are nice and snug, prevent that rolling of your ankle anymore, because you were probably doing it as you're walking down the street and whatnot. So that eversion movement is really important on your right foot for a right-handed golfer. Ideally, we don't want that weight to go to the outside of that foot, because that's one more moving part, could lead to a little excessive sway. And again, those are more moving parts that we need to get back to the ball at the same rate. So we've talked a little bit before on previous podcasts about the timing equation, things like that. We're trying to reduce variables in the golf swing, whereas if you've got no stability or no mobility in that ankle, it's going to introduce some more dysfunction, and then it's going to introduce some more variables down the road. So that eversion movement, that rolling to the inside of the foot, keeping the weight on the inside of that right heel or inside of that trail heel, if you're a left-handed golfer on that left side, is really important. So that's probably one of the most overlooked areas of the body as it relates to the golf swing. You know, you roll into your first lesson, if you can think back all the way back to your first one-off lesson or whatever. I mean, that guy mentioned anything about your feet and ankles? You might have mentioned it, you know, in the interview, but did he do any type of screening to see how it moves? Or,
well, we talked about it, but I would think your feet at, so you, it's eversion on the outside, is that, well, what it's,
so
on the right foot, yeah,
on the right foot, eversion is just keeping the weight on the inside of that foot.
What's the outside called?
That's inversion.
Inversion.
So that's how you sprain your ankle.
Okay, so when you go into the backswing, you want eversion on your right foot, right? You don't want to
get the weight to the outside of your foot.
Okay, but then on the follow through on a right hand golfer, when you go to the outside of your left ankle, what is that called?
That's called inversion.
Inversion. So that inversion part, I don't have a lot of.
Well, you had a ton of it before, and that was a problem.
That was the problem.
That's what led you
right
to the surgery
right
down the road.
I want to ask, in his screen, how much range of motion did he have from an inversion? Are we at zero? And I also want to ask, Were we in a scenario where we saw opportunity to improve where he was? And have we made improvement thus far with his range of motion, specifically lead ankle inversion?
So thinking back to it, I want to say we got into it and I'm like, all right, let's turn him in, turn him out. And he's like, just kind of looked at me and I'm like, all right, so that's where we're at.
Can't do much.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm pretty sure we were stuck on the ground with not a whole lot moving around.
Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon for a lot of golfers that come here because it's an uncommon movement. Like your ankles move, but you don't realize it. But when you ask somebody to isolate those movements, they're trying to get a lot of that motion from the hip. So we try to isolate it by putting the hands between the knees, keep those knees squeezed in there to try and see, can those joints move well by themselves? So one, it's just a coordination thing that a lot of people haven't done before. But in your particular case, it was like something that you know, your body kind of wanted to avoid from an inversion standpoint. Eversion, just a really hard movement, coupled with the fact that now you had that ankle.
But you know what's helped me with the inversion part on my left ankle? Even though I have 30%, let's say, relative to normal, when I swing the golf properly, when my body moves properly and everything's, I call it the ballet move, but everything, what do you say, in sync or tempo?
Do you like listening to dancing?
What?
Do you like listening to NSYNC?
No, I said in sync.
Yeah, got it.
Okay, so when you're in sync or I'm thinking shooting a free throw or doing something, when you're doing it properly, I don't think about eversion of my left, but it just happens. And our golf lesson today, I thought I was getting to my left side fine. When the rest of it works but properly, then you know you can get there.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Tommy.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that's kind of the magic behind the fitness side of things. You know, we're asking you to accomplish tasks to help you get into that situation so that we can, you know, eventually make it autonomous, that you get there automatically without thinking about it. So, you know, in the golf bay, you know, we're doing a lot of technical things. We're getting into positions, giving some drills, stuff like that. A lot of focus on, you know, how to get there and what position we should be in and stuff like that. But in the gym, we're just like, hey, chuck this ball against this wall with a step, and inherently, naturally, you're going to fire that thing against there, and it's going to help you get to that left side. So it's a balance between, you know, the technical element of it and then just trying to figure out how to get you to do it just automatically through things that you might have done before.
That's a great point, Tom, because
tossing
naturally,
hay bales up in Minnesota, stuff like that, you know.
No, naturally, you're right. No, that's actually right, Tom, because that's what I've learned, too, with working with Dan and Bill on MAT is your body will get there, and then the golf swing comes.
And another item I'd like just to add about our assessment, because it is such an important process. We've talked about it on a lot of different episodes, and that is the basis for how we put a program going, you know, going forward. You know, someone like Sai is a perfect example. You know, when we're in that assessment, we're looking at what moves well, what's stable, how those things are working together. And then ultimately we try and figure out, okay, which of those areas can we make some improvements in? And we'll put our best foot forward. So, you know, unique case and scenario, but everybody that walks in here, you might see somebody with limb and shoulder external rotation. You're like, oh, I'm going to try this stuff. Might work for three guys, might not work for the next two, because every human body is a little bit different as to, you know, how it got to where it got and how it typically moves and what they typically do. But point being is, you know, we figure out what areas we can make improvements on. The areas that we can't make, you know, real big improvements on, that's where we start to build the swing around that. So
let me jump on that, because like I said before, I took some lessons, and I took some lessons from coaches that didn't use data. I took some lessons from high data, okay, those 20 or 30 lessons. So I was trying to figure out what was right for me. But I tell you, the body part, what you guys are doing in terms of helping your body get in the correct positions while we're doing the golf coaching is a huge deal. Because without that, like your right shoulder, like your left ankle, like your hip moving, unless you can get those moving, you're never going to get there. Maybe not never, but it's going to be really difficult.
It'll take a lot longer.
It'll take a lot longer. So you might as well spend. Yeah, that's right, Tommy. That's right. It'll take a lot longer.
We like to expedite the process if we can.
We say it all the time. The brain's smart. You're going to take the path of least resistance. What we also say is the fastest way to make a swing change is to introduce pain. So if there is any movement pattern that is being asked of you that causes pain, one, you're not going to do it. And if you have injured yourself, aka your ankle, right, and you now have a history of experiencing that pain, you are going to avoid that pain whether you want to or not. So that goes to another statement we say all the time. Yes, we're going to work around what you bring to the table physically to build a golf swing that's specific for you. But we do make sure to say what's most efficient for the individual doesn't necessarily mean it's the most efficient in general. So yeah. Yes, we're going to work around you, but if we, you know, we can be a C version or we can be an A version of ourselves. And if there is an opportunity to put some work in the gym, work with Bill and MAT, go do some PT, but we can take some guy that's limited in range of motion, limited in stability, whatever it may be, but we can improve that. Number one, there's a timeline associated with that. So that's one of our 11 characteristics that play a role in the rate of development is what, how does your body physically function? But yeah, I mean, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but
will you pass the bourbon then?
Well, I poured it like I was pouring wine
and underneath there.
Tommy looked at me like, what are you doing?
It's underneath there.
But no, I like to make that point. So for you, you said, hey, we had a good lesson today. I was getting to my left side. No problem. You kind of said that nonchalant, but man, how long have we been working on that now? Like, how long have you been working on it, right? So it's been a year and a half. And as, you know, as a coach, you know, especially, I'll push my guys to the limit and I will use their pain tolerance as feedback, right? So what did we do early on? So I'd have you hit a ball.
And push it.
And I'd have you get to the lead side and just hold it. And I'd just ask you, does this hurt? And you'd be like, yes, no, well. But as time went on, it was like, we found like, that line of where this is probably the max we can do without pain, but we kept stretching it, kept pushing it. And we also found, and I think this is important to note, that there's a psychological barrier to once you've been injured and then swung or moved in a specific way, that even though it's been corrected, there's still a natural hesitancy to commit to it. And I can speak to that personally.
With your hip.
I have a hip replacement.
Well,
I
mean, your brain does what? It creates patterns in neuropat, right? It's like going down the snow hill. It creates patterns. It's hard to go down the backside of that hill, but that's what you have to learn is go a completely different way. So first you got to get off that pattern and then you got to get onto the new one and create. And four lessons doesn't cut it, right? Like you're not going to do it unless you spend a year going at it. Period. And you're going to make small changes. That's what I've learned. I want to be a scratch golfer. I'm a year and a half in. Joe, you said to me, you think I could do this?
I said today, looking at size golf swing, and I'd be happy to show it, but you came in and 90% of your golf swing was fundamentally sound. The biggest issues, which it's not always this black and white, 100%. Correlated with your limited mobility in your ankle.
So we're building a swing for that.
So I was going to say, temporarily, we're going to do is that as much as we can to build a pattern around your limitation in your foot. However, we're up in the gym going to continue to push, find out whatever your max mobility is in order for us to get not just an efficient swing for you.
What was I hitting my forearm today?
But an efficient swing. We did have a really good session today. Yes, he hit five of the best four irons of his life. But like just to see it.
How far did
like,
they go?
I don't know, 225. I mean, we were going to the fairway, so they went like 250. But
okay. Well, that's pretty good. This sounds better than 225.
But I want to like, again, we're kind of going a little over the place, but whatever.
I'm just saying,
how simple was the direction today?
It was amazing. Right? That's what I'm saying. It was amazing. Like, so it was a three-quarter swing. It was better tempo. I didn't feel like I was pushing it. And I got to my left side, Tommy, with E version. But that's is it inversion?
Correct.
Rolling the ankle
as you're finishing that.
Okay, inversion. Yeah. And I felt very little pain, a little inversion. But I got to my 30%. And I was happy with that.
So here's a perfect example of...
And you'll get into more and more of that as you build confidence. So
that's
Joe
right.
was alluding to that. You know, you have an injury. You know, first time out on the court, you're kind of, you know, running around a little gingerly.
Yep.
Trying to avoid landing on people's feet. And
that's
stuff
what
like
I felt
that.
Like.
And then ultimately, you're like, find yourself, you know, end
jumping.
The game. You're like, okay, game's on the line. Got to play some tough D. We got to get a stop here, stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, man, that was great.
But it took me a year and a half to get there.
Sure.
And so I think that's my it's patience. and I'm 48 years old. So if you come into this thinking you're going to learn this game in a, you know, 3-month lesson, come on.
3-month lesson?
Well, but or you know what I mean? 3-month eval, whatever you guys offer. I remember I see
our
people coming.
Service up.
Your initial service. I'm like, you're out of your mind. You gotta go all in. Now, I would like to see a little more short game stuff. I think that's where I can get a little better. That's
all right,
why
me,
I have
let
two
me
coaches.
Stop here for a minute. So you are not wrong, okay, with your analysis, but you need to also, I think the audience needs to be aware is, yes, as a guy that's 48, okay, so that's, we're talking about the 11 characteristics that play a role in your rate of development. Here they are on the board. We've got age at number one, right?
Time available whenever I want.
Here's the deal here, though, Si. Yeah, you're 48, but so for an 18-year-old or a 25-year-old that might be listening to this, sure, I still think that's really good advice to manage and make sure expectations match reality, but they're going to learn faster.
Way faster.
Way faster. That just is. There's more neuroplastic.
2-3x. Yep.
Potentially. Now, if you take the wild card with you, though, Si, and this is a wild card for also the listeners, even if you are, let's say, you know, not in your 20s anymore, you know, in your 40s, but you grew up playing college basketball or you played a lot of high-level tennis or you played hockey or you played baseball, that is a wild card. Yeah. I've taken guys such as yourself, 48, been playing 30-plus years, but they played all of those sports growing up, which we talk about all the time, about certain skill sets that you need to be introduced to at certain ages in development as we grow older, right?
Yep.
And if you've hit those, you're going to heighten your ceiling of potential when it comes to other
sports. Yep.
So again, yes, signing up for a 3-month program might not take a 15 to a scratch. Remember, your goals are high. But yes, based on what we've seen thus far and seeing that 90% of your swing being fundamentally sound and now seeing today, like, it's always a learning experience as a coach as well, right? So, like, I'm going to push him. I'm going to find out where that limit, that max limit is. And I would say, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think maybe you've even been surprised, like, holy cow, I actually didn't realize I could do this.
Today was a prime example.
And I just want to say this because I had mentioned, you know, talked about how simple our direction was. And then he had mentioned like 3 or 4 items in which I didn't even think were on the list. They were on the list of objectives, but not of what we talked about today. Do you remember specifically what we talked about today? Here's going to be potentially a perfect example.
What we taught in our lesson?
Yes.
So
what was the big takeaway? What do I want you doing?
My chicken wing causes problems. So if I keep my left arm straight and I'm releasing the club, the rest of the body sort of follows. That's what I felt. So I did play tennis at a high level. Okay, so my tennis swing feels the same thing. You disassociate, and then you kind of get this right arm in, and you go. That's similar to the golf swing.
Yes,
it's very now the face stays open in a tennis swing, similar to the golf swing. People go like this, and I used to do this, right? So call this where your right wrist bends. Let's say
cupping balls,
and so I don't want to do that anymore. But now this right hand open. Just like the tennis swing, I feel that. And I feel my right arm. And I was hitting balls after we did. I came back. And unbelievable. And the rest of the body sort of just follows because this stays connected. And so, but that takes 5, 6, 7, 8 lessons to feel that. Go out and play 2-3 rounds. It's brutal.
And we still don't own it. I wouldn't even say we're barely renting. I always say you get experience. So you're in, you're smelling it.
Yeah.
Then you're tasting it. Then you're renting it. And then hopefully one day we own it.
I'm tasting it-ish. Okay. I'm tasting it.
I agree. You did a really good job today. But I think that's just a perfect example where you took the biggest issue, one of the biggest issues, which was the chicken wing. And although, like, you do not have to have an extended left arm through the hit, you know, we called it a drill. I said, I want you uncomfortable. I want you to make this extremely challenging on yourself. You know, to paint a picture, if you put both your arms in front of you and you lock your hands together, and I say, hey, without rotating your chest, let's get your arms pointing to the left if you're a right-handed golfer and keep them extended, right? So
that's what this would look like.
Yeah.
You can't do it. And the only way you can successfully rotate with keeping your arms straight, or the only way you can actually keep your arms straight is by what?
Moving your
rotating
your upper body.
So rather than talking about weight shift left, rather than talking about getting the outside of the ankle, all that stuff, I said, let's make a swing at whatever speed you can do it. You have to finish with both your arms extended. As soon as he started to do that, then we introduced a little bit how to rotate and release the club head.
Okay, right? But let me take a step back. First, you went into my body my hands. You taught me how to hit a hook because I couldn't even get there. And I was flipping and I was hitting these weird. So you're like, let me break your swing first. It has only 4 or 5 lessons. Break the swing first. Rebuild it. Another 4 or 5 lessons. And then I was taking lessons with Barney too. So we were sort of breaking and building all up with the left ankle being my, you know, Dan, I could barely walk when we came in here, right? Like I still can't do calf raisers. I can't do 20 calf raisers on my left side. So I still have limitations, but I'm saying you helped me break it down, understand my problems, what I was doing wrong, and then building it back up. So that I feel like now there's direction. There's a path. I do feel that.
Beautiful.
And believe that.
I have a question for Tommy and Dan. Yeah. You know, so there's a combination between ankle stability and mobility. Would you say one is more important? Would be one more important on the right side versus or trail side versus lead side? And why? And then maybe even correlate that using John Rahm and his club foot as an example.
Well, if we go back to our stability mobility model, the feet are supposed to be stable in the golf swing. The ankle joins themselves, the subtalar joint, if we want to get technical, is supposed to be mobile. So I would say mobility is most important at the ankle joint. If we lack mobility in that area, it's going to cause dysfunction further up the chain. Pain at the knee, it's going to cause a mobile joint like your knee to be more mobile. But so,
Can I interrupt that?
Sure.
Could there potentially be an argument saying, let's say for trail side, that, and again, I don't know, stability, mobility, let's say this, could mobility be way more important for your lead side than your trail side?
In the inversion motion. So I would say if you're lacking any amount of mobility or motion on your trail side, your right side for a right-handed golfer, I would prefer to have less inversion because that's less likely that your foot's going to go outwards there. Eversion is super important, or the ability to be able to keep that weight on the inside. So inversion limitation on the trail side, I said I could tolerate and live with. Inversion is important on that left side, which is sounds like an issue that you guys continue to work on through.
Specifically to club foot with John Rahm.
Well, he doesn't trail have side. It anymore.
Yeah, I mean, so that was something that he, you know, experienced as a child and stuff like that. So he has some limitations that are still present there, you know, via his TPI screen and things like that. But that was definitely something he needed to work around and definitely has built his swing around the limitations that lie there. So they did as much as they could from a surgical repair standpoint, from a rehabilitation standpoint, training with some of the best, you know, golf and fitness and instructors in the world, other than those of us here at Smart Golf and Fitness, you know. But, you know, obviously they've done a really good job of, you know, figuring out how well they can improve the mechanics of that ankle, strength and stability around it to, you know, definitely help any limitations that might still be there and then, you know, build this golf swing around that. So you can argue, you know, or you can justify that lack of mobility on that trail side as a huge power source for him. So, you know, but you could also work on, you know, talk about his sequencing from a very shortened position compared to some of the longer swings that are on tour. So.
Yeah, I don't know. When I think about it, you know, if I had to choose, you know, I look at the backswing as a position in which you load into, right? Sure. You know, I kind of look at your trail leg as your leg for your backswing and your lead leg as your leg for your downswing. And a lot of the science and data and, you know, ground force reactions, what we learned from that also support that theory. And, you know, so when I think about if I had to choose whether this is accurate or correct or not, I would definitely, you know, put a higher emphasis and hope that a guy would have great mobility on his lead side. And if I had to make a sacrifice, I probably would think lack of mobility on the trail side if I had to, just because that's more of what you need to be a stable segment. Now, that being said, yeah, if a guy doesn't have the ability to evert, you might see some goofy things in how he loads up into that hip.
Yeah,
you know.
Otherwise, you might, you know, you might look at the longevity of the knee. You might look at how that changes the mechanics of hip rotation. So if you've got more, you know, hip internal rotation to that right side, or you do a little bit of manipulation with that foot, not have it square, maybe flare it a little bit, then you can, you know, work around that and take advantage of good hip internal rotation to make sure that it doesn't tear apart the knee or the lower back, because those are, again, what's going to happen. If you've got an area that's supposed to be mobile, doesn't work well, might work well for now, but it's going to eventually, you know, manifest itself as an injury in another segment.
You know what I found, Tommy?
Stable.
To your point, that left foot flared, the knee being mobile, but now my hips are starting to get sore. My left hip is getting sore because I'm turning around better. So after every lesson, my left hip is sore. And I'm realizing because I'm posting and I'm turning better. And when you get your core stronger, that's a huge deal. I don't have lower back problems anymore. Perfect. My core.
Nice work, Dan.
Yeah, nice work, Dan. So we're getting that core. What in your hip drops, right? What is that called, Dan, when your hips?
Your pelvic tilt.
Yeah,
and we talked a lot about early on in your journey here, too. You were telling me about how your back was just causing you tons of problems. And I think you were on Smart Cup.
Yeah.
When it really flared up and you're like, holy cow. So we started working on bracing through the core a lot more. And every time, like prior to every swing, I had you thinking about pushing your sternum down and trying to connect it to your belly button, not fully sucking it in, but just kind of engaging it, ready for like you're going to take a punch every time. And then from there on, you're like, hey, it's kind of gone. And now I can feel that elasticity pulling through my stomach.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm actually using my core, not my lower back, to make this swing anymore. And, you know, something simple like that made a huge difference. And it honestly came from a lot of just conversation between you, me, and Barney early on in the journey here to figure that small thing out. Because originally, I think we talked about, we didn't think your glutes were activating enough.
No.
And that's where the back problem was. And lo and behold, we weren't stable in our core at all.
No.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before. And, you know, I mean, the three motions that help the glutes and hips load, you've got hip flexion, so bending forward at your waist to get over the golf swing. You've got the ability to resist, you know, the hips moving laterally in the golf swing, so that inherently is adduction, and then you've got internal rotation into that hip. So again, if that ankle doesn't move well, again, you know, that left side in particular, you won't have the strength and stability to be able to post on that left side.
But just think, I'm a 48-year-old guy, and I got to learn all this by myself? No way.
I mean,
right? Like, this has been a blessing, because I can go through this, and I can struggle, ask questions, and you incrementally, slowly, oh, I learned how to brace. I learned how to evert. I learned how to post. I mean, you don't get that from a clip in a golf lesson. That's what I've struggled with before, is how the heck am I supposed to learn all this stuff on the golf swing?
Well, you said you don't have to go to work anymore. So you got
I know. I'm here 4 or 5 hours a day. So it's a hard, yeah.
You might accidentally stumble across a couple of videos that might lead you down the right path. But again, that's a trial and error type of thing. Whereas we're providing
the
an
whole
actual
thing
path for you. Everything we do might not be exactly elicit the results that we need immediately, but you know, it's things that have worked, you know, for other people before, or it's things that we've provided an analysis for, and we're making an educated guess on what we want to do to get you to do
that. A highly educated guess, by the way.
Correct.
Highly educated.
And we've done it long enough that, you know, we've got a pretty good idea on what stuff works. And
I'm going to be a scratch in 2 years.
Love that. Love that. Put it on wax.
We'll see. We're also really big on making sure expectations match reality.
Joe,
so let's take one day at a time. I didn't promise you shit. I promised I'm your best chance to get there, which that is actually the truth. So
I got it on video.
So I do love this particular example because it's so straightforward. And we've said it in the beginning of this podcast, and we'll say it again. The ankles are some of the most overlooked segments in the body in the entire golf swing. And it makes a lot of sense because when you show up to a lesson, you know, you're looking at the bigger moving body parts. You're looking at upper body rotation. You're looking at lower body. You're looking at wrist angles. You're looking at club. But at the end of the day,
one-off lesson, you're looking at grip.
Yeah, club face, sure. You know? I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, your ankles are going to be your only link between the ground and the body. And it's, you know, people say it all the time with the grip. Well, they're your only link between your hands and the club. You know, whether it's just as important, still a very valid relation to be aware of. So for me, I'll just to summarize, you know, I wrote this down earlier, but when I think of stable and mobile ankles, I think of stable ankles provide a foundation for initiating and controlling movements, while mobile ankles, where you really, really lack, allow for efficient weight transfer and power generation. So just to summarize, the ankles are extremely important when it comes to your golf swing. And I think, you know, for anyone that's listening and struggling with, you know, maybe some of the swing issues that we've discussed, that might be an area you should take a deeper look into. And that's where, you know, whether it's coming to see us or anyone that's in the TPI world or a PT that has the ability to look a little bit deeper into your ankle mobility and stability, I promise you, you will not regret looking in, a little bit deeper into that if you're genuinely serious about getting down to the root of your big issues.
Right.
All right. So, Dan, you've kind of gone a little bit in depth already, but, you know, if you want to share or shed a little bit more light, just kind of discussing, you know, your journey thus far with Cy, you know, maybe specifically the evolution with where he started, maybe specific to his ankles, but wherever you want to go, but kind of just the journey thus far in the gym with him and, you know, how do you feel about his progress? Has it been good? Is he a good student? But whatever you'd like to share, just to kind of, you know, give our listeners, you know, an inside look on what's kind of transpired thus far.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I can say, you know, from day one, size, you know, you want to talk about the 11 characteristics and, you know, you could throw some of these things out and just go, let's look right to the last one on the list and just talk about work ethic and actually mindset too. I mean, the guy comes in focused, ready to go. Even if he's in the midst of like on a call or whatever, or doing whatever he needs to be doing for his own personal well-being or his personal life, he's like, don't worry, let's go. I'm ready. I'm fired up. He gets that like gritty teeth look at me. And I know he's serious about his time. And the first thing though, actually he says to me, he's like, what are we listening to?
Yeah.
Can we get some like 90s rock or something up here? Something with, you know, some balls or
yeah.
something.
We need
like
some
that.
Teeth.
He's like, yeah,
we need
he's
some
like,
teeth.
Let's go. And I know that's going to be a great session. So, and, you know, we'll talk about it as he's like kind of warming up of like, you know, what are we feeling? How's the leg? How's the ankle? How's the calf? And, you know, right at that time, even if I have a generalized plan, I know that it could flip in a second because he's going to be like, hey, my ankle feels like shit. I'm not going to be able to do anything lower body.
We go all upper body.
Yeah. Then it's like, hey, let's shift to upper body. But you know, what I'm trying to get focused on with him is a lot of like unilateral stuff. Cause I want him to have that balance. I want him to feel stable on both sides of his body, as well as like not only his ankle mobility, but his ability to get ground force. So we've been spending a lot of time on, you know, working on step ups, split squats. And, you know, every time when I have it set up for him, I have this like training wheel aid for him, like where we're going to have a band, we're going to have a foam roller or something where he could be like, hey, I'm going to put my hand here. I was like, you know, just use this. So that way, you know, we're not going crazy. And he's like, nope, I'm doing this till it hurts. And then we're going to move on from there. So, you know, we've been focusing a lot on our lower body and as well as getting his hips rotating a lot more where he feels comfortable working with resistance and actually feeling that movement come through as well as pushing through the floor.
Well, without you, Dan, I wouldn't have gotten here because it's wild how you can only do so much PT.
Yeah.
You can only do so many ankle movements and up and down and calf stretches. You got to get out and push it.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation is the limitations of our healthcare system. We've got a great PT here. She started her own concierge, you know, PT service to allow her to get outside of those limitations.
Yeah.
A traditional PT script, you know, they've got to work on the item in front of them. But
yep.
As we all know, it might not be that area. Yes, yours was surgically repaired, but there are other areas that can help accelerate that process that we want to move through. But yeah, to your point, return of sport is something that's super important. And that's what we pride ourselves on. Once you're cleared from that PT, once that doctor's given you a go, we can start that return to sport training. We can start that return to sport strengthening that it takes to get back to doing, you know, what you love to do and doing so at a level, high level or a higher level than you did before.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to be there. I really do. I think you got to push it and you got to find boundaries.
Love it, guys.
Pass the bourbon.
Could talk hours for this about this. All right, so let's move it back over to Cy. Again, we've kind of jumped ahead and some of the answer to this question has already been discussed. But, you know, first of all, let's kind of give a state of the union. You know, where are you at relative to your goals currently? Are there any highlights you'd like to communicate? And let's be candid about it as far as, you know, where your expectations might have been relative to where you're at in the journey? Like, be candid. Where are you at?
If I think I'm in the middle. I think I'm kind of in the middle. I think I'm, you know, but I'm also one of those that I don't think I'm really great.
Let's say, so you started as a 15.
Yeah, right? And I'm a 10.
And you're at a 10 right now. So we had a 5-stroke drop. And let's be fair, right? The first year, a lot of it was just most balance. Of it prioritized on
balance.
Gym. And
yeah.
balance. Like, there, you know, we talk about, you know, what I said earlier, you know, we try to build a swing that's most efficient for you, but yep. that doesn't mean that it's the most efficient in general. You were kind of already there.
Yep.
So we were in a position where we could try to push you.
I was really bad when I started.
No, what really I mean, bad your swing was really bad because
yeah,
so yeah. was your left ankle.
That's right.
So we were kind of
rebuilding,
inhibited by the rate in which your ankle could improve is
yeah,
what I'm saying.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We can only go as fast as I could get to my left side, which took a year. And so now we're a year and a half in, I'm still probably 80% strength. I try to do my calf raises every day. I try to, you know, Dan's got me my left butt cheek trying to gauge all that stuff. That's what I'm saying. I'm in the middle. If not in a year and a half, I'm not scratch. I'm coming back and saying, we got to figure this out.
All right, so we probably should just end our relationship now.
Yeah. I just wanted to know where we're at.
We're setting you up for failure if you think we're going to drop 10 strokes at 48 years old and a year and a half. Here's what you, again, let's use this as
crazy expectations.
Let's just use this as a learning opportunity. You know, like, listen, what we do here is we are going to educate you in how to spend time the rest of your life, right? So I think James Clear said it from Atomic Habits, right? A habit isn't a finish line to be crossed. It's a lifestyle to be lived.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to control what you can control, Si, right? And that's showing up, coming in with a strong work ethic, understanding the big picture to where you're going to put your time in.
Yeah.
We're going to pay attention to the details throughout the course of a season, where you might be losing strokes. Maybe we need to pivot. Maybe we need to work a little more on short game. Maybe we need to learn a little work more on putting. But at the end of the day, you're going to have the answers. You already have them. What you do, why you do it, what comes from them, and the limitations from them that would inhibit and make it harder to score.
So
even today, we embarked on uncharted territory. You experienced a ball strike you really haven't experienced.
Ever.
Right?
Yeah.
So all I'll say is this. Do I think at
some
point...
So do you think I'll be scratch?
Time out.
Wait, do you think I'll be scratch?
This is a perfect example of client-coach interaction.
Yeah, well, you asked me about me, and then you stepped in and told
me
about
me.
You said, hey, Si, let me ask you about you. And well, the kind
of, this is also a perfect opportunity, example of how I dominate conversation. Now.
I know, but I love you. That's why I'm stepping in and asking how I feel.
No, I love this because this is as real as it gets. This is real.
Yeah.
So
this is the interaction you have to have with your coach. Because unless you break through and get a little, you know, where are you?
Sometimes you got to put your foot down. This is what I always say to all my coaches. Your certainty as a coach must always outweigh your students' uncertainty, right? And uncertainty shows up a little bit different. Sometimes it's aggressive. Sometimes it's anger. Sometimes it's legitimately like, it's doubtful.
So do you think I'm going to be a scratch or not?
Here we go. I will say this, Si, and I'm not, and if anyone has worked with me, they know that I don't sugarcoat anything. I think your swing mechanically, from a full swing perspective, will be able to produce a ball that could allow you to be a scratch golfer. Now, the other components that are a little bit of an unknown right now, the mental side of it.
Oh, come on.
Right? I'm just saying. The short game putting, chipping. Okay? And there's a few other layers to this. But would I be absolutely shocked one day if you were a scratch golfer? The answer is no. A year and a half? Yes.
So you're in front of Congress, and they're asking you, yes or no, is he going to be a scratch or not?
If he continues to stay at Smart Golf and Fitness for the better part of 5 to 7 years, yes.
5 to 7 years? I love it. Hey,
I'm kind of joking, but listen.
But not really.
I don't like to put a timeline on guys' goals because that's a restraint and it's a negative.
You've got to admit, I've learned a lot in the last...
I'm questioning it after sitting down and talking to you for an hour on a podcast.
No, I want to, you know what, Joe, this is a real, we all, I heard a quote that said, if you ask men, could they land a plane if the pilot died? Every single man says, yes, I could land the plane, right? If the pilot died and I had to get in the plane and somebody got in the head thing, I could land the plane. Bullshit. Bullshit. That's what everybody thinks about their golf swing. Could I be a scratch? I should be a scratch. No, you can't. And I know, I'm saying that to myself. I want to be a scratch, but I also know it's probably 5 years, not 2 years. Right?
And
it's the same thing.
It just, there's a lot of details to being a scratch.
Right.
Right? That go well beyond just having a really, really good golf swing.
Right.
Listen, we're being recorded. I do think you could probably get there, especially, but listen, if you had a full-time, regular, 40-hour-a-week job and had different commitments than you currently have.
Yeah, I don't.
Right.
Yeah. So I want to be a scratch.
So I just want listeners to know that your circumstances, okay, 11 characteristics, one of them's time available, right?
Genetics, lifestyle.
You have a lot of it. Stop it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get back on track here. I enjoyed that little
sidetrack.
Yeah, it was great. Okay. So we're going to wrap up here, but if you had some advice for someone interested in picking up the game or considering instruction in general, what might you share with them?
Picking up the game.
They want to pick it up. They want to take it.
I don't think you can do it 20%. You've got to try. Take a time frame, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and do it as best you can. Because golf is a journey, not a destination, right? Like we all struggle with it. So you got to find that level of your journey. Like, oh, I want to learn golf. I'm going to go to the range for five times. No, you're not. That's, you know, it's kind of like learning how to drive a race car. No, you're not. You know, you got to do it all in. If I was picking up the game with my son, same thing. He's came take five lessons, drive me nuts. Like, I want him to come as much as I do. You got to go deep. You got to go deep if you're going to get into golf and be prepared to go deep.
We've talked about, you know, it having one of the, you know, steepest learning curves of a lot of sports that are out there. So, but the nice thing is there's a lot of transfers.
You can be 7 feet and play in the NBA and just, you know, learn how to shoot a free throw. You know, you can play D2 basketball being 7 feet. You can't do that in golf. You know, you really, really got to play a lot.
Yeah, there used to be a crazy statistic out there that if you were 7 foot, I think there was like, gosh, what was it? 20% chance you're going to be in the NBA?
Yeah.
Or something crazy.
Or at least play D1 or D2. Yeah, you don't get paid.
That's probably gone.
Yeah. Okay, so prior to wrapping up here, Dan, Tommy, do you have any closing thoughts? Anything else you'd want to share in regard to our conversation?
I've really enjoyed seeing you around, Si, and I've enjoyed getting to know you inside of the facility as well as out. You've, you know, been a part of a couple of our golf outings as well, our around the area outings, as well as our most recent Smart Cup. So that's what I really enjoy. You know, it's one thing to see, you know, sweaty with your, you know, $15,000 shoes on up in the gym. Wow. Just, you know, and Dan's got plastic bags on him, so you're not sweating on top of them to save them, and passing in the hallways and seeing you grinding in the bay and stuff like that. But I always enjoy our interactions outside of that and being able to tie it all together and learn from you and, you know, your inquisitive questions and try to dig for some answers and make me, you know, kind of do some self-reflection and stuff like that. So I've enjoyed our developing friendship and look forward to that.
Tommy, I would say the exact same thing about you, brother.
Thanks.
I mean, being from Wisconsin, I'm from Minnesota. It's a little weird that you're on the other side, but look, you guys have a great culture and that's what I found different than anywhere else. And it starts with you two leaders. Dan does a great job. And you guys are doing a phenomenal job. So when you step into the arena here, you're going to learn. You're going to have to go deep and get better. Don't come in here wanting to take two or three lessons. That's not that just the tip doesn't work here, right? I've learned that, right? Like I'm all in. You got to go all in and go deep.
Everything about the tip.
Well, I think we can cut that out. But yeah, I'm just saying.
It's the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy seeing you. Love our hours together. They're honestly enjoyable. Plus, they also force me to question a lot of things of what I think I know and make me realize that there's a lot of things I don't know. It's also, I think, helped me be a better coach because I have to do a lot more research and look at things out in the world to see what else I can do to help provide you the best possible hour of coaching I can do. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate our time. And honestly, like, I just enjoy having you upstairs. It's a pleasure. So,
well, thank you.
I will echo that. I will say Cy is the epitome of an individual with a growth mindset. I really enjoy working with someone that understands kind of the process. They know that there's going to be effort, there's going to be mistakes, there's going to be challenges. And, you know, there's going to be sometimes feedback that I have to deliver that might not come in the exact way that you would have expected it to. But you get it. You understand that I'm a coach. And all I care about, at least in the beginning, is getting you better at golf, because that's what you've signed up and paid for. Now, through the hours we spend together, of course, we're going to laugh. We're going to talk football. We're going to build a relationship. I will say, you know, Tommy, you talked about it a minute ago. I met Cy on one of our Smart Cups, which is an annual trip we take with 24 guys, sometimes more, 28, 32. But that was the first time we had an opportunity to interact. And you've been coming in and out of the facility, but I had yet to really engage in much conversation with you. And, you know, over some really expensive bottles of wine, which you were generous enough to bring and share, you know, we got into it. We started rapping, and then we ended up playing golf together. And, you know, you didn't play particularly well that day, and it sparked a conversation, and we spent some time on the range, and there was some immediate rapport made. And, you know, so I really, you know, don't get me wrong, I still love working with the students that need a lot of coaching on being conditioned to have the complementary mindset. And you're not necessarily an exception there, but I love seeing, you know, the light bulbs go off and the expressions you make, because you get it, although you don't have it yet.
Yep.
But you understand what's coming next. And it's just, that's the learning process. That's why we're all here. We absolutely love what we do. And we're very fortunate to have individuals such as yourself part of our membership. And, you know, for the listeners, I would say, you know, we got a lot of really great guys just like Cy here, and that are just, at the end of the day, we love golf, we love a good hang, and, you know, we love a good challenge, and we're just trying to, you know, make our life as happy as it possibly can.
Can I throw in here on one of the golf trips, one of those smart golf trips are phenomenal, but can I just throw in there that I saved your life, Joe? Do you remember when you overheated and I saved your life? Just so we know that for the podcast?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure record.
I'll just say this. We're not 100% certain if it was because of the defeat, because it was one of the second losses of what? How many? Well,
you were going down fast, and I saved your life with, you know, quick thinking, you know, cold presses.
It's true.
Water.
Your hand was up my shirt, but nice on my back.
I saved your life.
No, in all seriousness, thank you. Okay. You're right. You know, okay. And that's where that was actually probably the real reason I decided to take you on.
Thank you.
Guys, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your contributions to the awesome conversation. We obviously could talk about this for hours.
It's fun. Yeah,
every episode. You know, it's a ton of fun. Tons of tangents and tons of different side stories that we can bring on to the mix. So we try to keep it, you know, centered as much as we can, but we're out here to have fun, as evidenced by our beverage choices this evening. But as we like to end every episode, if we're ready to do so, I think we got to give Cy
the opportunity prior to.
We don't have any.
Hey, if you have a tip for our audience, you're our guest today. So what would be your tip in regard to helping them improve their golf game?
What's my tip for the golf game?
Sure.
Grip it and rip it.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I appreciate
it. No one's ever heard that before, right?
It's a game of speed now.
Yeah.
We're all big fans of John Daly. But I, you know, it's evolved to grip it and sip it. So on that note, cheers.
Cheers.
Love you all, guys.
Love you guys.
Thank you so much. All right. And that's a wrap.
A big thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Everything But the Tip podcast. Stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following @SmartGolfFitness. For additional episodes, updates, and exclusive content, check out our website at smartgolffitness.com. Don't forget to show some love, like, share, and subscribe to ensure you never miss out on the latest insights and engaging discussions. Your support means the world to us. Until next time, keep swinging and stay fit.